Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Plodcast, presented by sportsshoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Plodcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome back to the podcast, guys. Episode 99, approaching the big 100. For this episode, we got another coach on the pod, Vince Wilson, coach of Callie Thackeray and Sam Harrison. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome back to another week. Thanks for tuning in once again, guys. Some awesome racing last week at the Cross Challenge. And then you've got it all again this weekend with the Valencia half. It looks a stellar lineup. Kind of put out a post the other day just with the top five British men. I think Mohamed was added to the field as well. So excited to see what he can do. And yeah, by the time you're listening, Valencia would have all gone down. You're probably scanning through the results as you're listening. So may even have to do a little review on that one. But yeah, huge guest this week. And Vince Wilson is quite fitting, really. Samantha Harrison goes in the Valencia half herself on Sunday, which is tomorrow. So look out for her result by the time you're listening as well. You probably would know already. And he kind of speaks to how her build up towards this race, the purpose of this race, looking ahead into the future, how she kind of attacks the road scene a little bit more. But the biggest thing that I wanted to kind of take from Vince is, you know, how do you take someone who is virtually, you know, a fun runner, a complete novice of the sport, how do you take them to an international? And, you know, it's one thing doing it when they're a junior, when you pick them up when they're 18, 19, and then they're green and you know, they've had a little bit of background dipping in and out of the sport. But, you know, when you take someone like Sam Harrison in her 20s by the time she started the sport seriously, and he's taken her to an international athlete now, it must be a very different concept to what we're used to and what we know of in the UK. So, yeah, definitely got a lot of that out of him, a lot of his coaching background as well. And he's a very interesting character in the sport. Is Vince, and he kind of talks on the relationship and how important it is to, you know, really spend time and take care with one athlete. He's not one of these coaches who coaches loads of athletes. He just coaches a very select few at the moment. So look out for him. Look out for what Sam Harrison is going to do over the next few years. He's also now coaching Callie Thackeray. So that was an interesting scoop as well. So, but yeah, all in all, great podcast. Enjoy it. We're nearing 100. Something big's coming next week. And thank you always, as always, for listening, guys.
Right, Vince, first off, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not at all. Look, we want to start off a bit with your own running days. I think, obviously, you started out in the Northeast. Describe, like, sort of how you got into the sport in the first place.
I started in age 14. Where I went to a school, obviously, in Hebburn, town in Weir, athletics is massive. It's huge. It was bigger than football because, obviously, Crammy's breaking all his records. 800 metres up the road at Moncton Stadium, literally a stone's throw away from our school. School teachers were very, very proactive then at getting you into sport, especially running. And a really good example of what happened this week. So my stepson, he ended up going to a school race this week. School teacher took me up in Stafford. There wasn't any athletes there. So it was really badly organised this week. So I'll give you an example how it is now to how it was then. You know, our teachers are so proactive. So they got me into the sport, inadvertently got me into the sport, so I didn't really want to go. I didn't really have kit, trainers, the right type of stuff. I turned up with a pair of jeans and a pair of trainers with about five stripes on, and the kids were a bit cruel down there and tried to take the mick, and ended up in a scuffle. Pushed the guy over, not a great running. I got suspended on my first night. So, but fortunately, Jimmy Headley, who was my latter coach, he seen something within me in that night, because he was watching me running. He come and got a hold of me, found out I was in a local care system on the road, so we had a bit of a marital breakup, and the family went up in care. And Jimmy got out of his way, come and got me out of the kids' home, just picked me up, take me down there. He told me after about 6 weeks, if I stuck to it, I could have a load of Crummy's cast-offs. Because Crummy switched from Nike to Adidas at that time. So, second-hand clothes premium then. Probably premium now. Hartfield, they're vintage stores, so we worth a lot more. So yeah, fortunately, some good people around me got me into sport age 14.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, why do you think, you know, teachers and kids, it is harder to get in the sport. It should be easier to get into the sport now, but it's almost harder to convince kids to do it. And obviously, is it just because there wasn't much else for you to do that you were able to take a liking to it?
One of you had a little bit of talent because we used to always go up scrapes as kids. We'd be climbing on tops, you know, and doing crazy mad stunts, jump from one to another, and naturally someone would call the local police or something, we'd be getting chased, and then we would manage to get away. I also remember some of my infancy of running training was interval training is about from 12 to 13, running after coal trucks. My own mother used to send us with a big bag, big like a rucksack, run after the coal trucks, pull the levers, drop big lumps of coal. I mean, I sat there in 97, don't I, really, with a story, but coal fires in the northeast, and just run after coal trucks. And I was only able to run after them, catch them, drop the lever, and then my brother, he was filling up the bag with a big massive piece of coal and break it up in the garden. So, I think, you know, if I look now, generally, I've done coaching a number of clubs. Some tough areas in the northeast. I've coached most of the influential postcodes in the UK at Sutton Coalfield. I generally do find some of the tougher areas, the kids really want to do it. Sometimes, you know, it's quite common, club coaching, you can be used as a babysitter, to be honest. A lot of parents drop the kids off, kids don't even want to be there. It's a shame, because obviously, you know, you've got collectively a group of kids, and some will, but enough of the sport is glamorous as it used to be. I believe the sport, at this moment in time, we've had a big step forward with Jake winning the World 1500 Meter Championships. But you've got to remember that was 40 years ago we last won the World 1500 title, obviously with Cram. And in that era, obviously the Cram Eco, but we all know this golden era. We didn't just have one or two, we had three and possibly four with Peter Elliott and, you know, some of the guys knocking on the door. So the sport was much, much held in higher profile in that era. So It was a draw to sports. As I say, it was high on the curriculum from school. Not so sure it's as high on the curriculum at this moment in time, but I think that's definitely the biggest factor I would pinpoint it to.
Yeah, it's interesting, really. And I know, Matt, you had almost a similar experience. Like, which I remember when I first met Matt, he was telling me that one of your school teachers was actually really into cross-country. Your whole year group would do it, whereas now it's almost... it's unheard of, like around most schools, for people our age, and I'm sure younger as well.
It depends on the teacher. So I'll give you a good example. At Loughborough Grammar, there's a guy there called David Miles. Now, David Miles is an ex-Gateshead Harrier, international 5,000-metre athlete, ran like 13 mids, and he's really keen with that school. So when I was helping out at Charnwood as a club coach over Alison Wyeth, you know, we had... athletes such as Ben Dystra in this team, by the way. A couple of twins, Ben and Ollie Rouse, a guy, Joe Pollard, runs for St. Mary's now. And we had a lot of athletes who came from that school because proactivity within the teaching. And I remember one year, they won the King George Relays, or the big, these relays every year, held in high esteem with all private schools. And without the active influence of people like Mr. Miles at that time, it gives kids, a taste for the sport. If you get a taste of not just the sport, but success, you know, a lot of these people still have the sport today. So I believe it's definitely about teaching.
Yeah, man, I'd totally agree with that as well. And I think the link between schools and clubs is just becoming less and less. So it's probably why, you know, we're seeing numbers, which are less and less. But look, let's talk about, you know, how you started, you know, coaching out. And specifically, I'd like to know, you know, who was your first athlete? You know, are you still coaching them? Because I think that relationship with the kind of first athlete you kind of get hold of is an interesting one.
Yeah. So first I decided to coach. I was asked, by the way, by a guy in the Northeast. I was living in Durham. A guy was called Sean Morley. Now, Sean was at the time running about 3:55 at his best. He was a local Durham City Harrier. And as I sort of finished off my career, it was funny because you sort of go full circle as an athlete. You start in the league systems. We were in some very small league, Division 5 Northeast, Jarrow. you tend to do the odd ones throughout your career, but generally your focus becomes more BMC, as you know. If you're lucky enough, I used to get them, like Gates said, Golden League, not Diamond League, it was Golden League then. So you're fortunate again in good races. But I remember as I sort of come towards the back end of my career at age 30, I decided to go back to these leagues. It was great because I was able to win races again. I remember my last race going to Carlisle at the Sheepmont Stadium. On the bus with a load of lads, we had a kick about before we even, that was our warm-up, we played five-a-side, you know, which we should do as kids at the Young McDonald's Leagues, and literally having fun and enjoying. And then this guy who finished second to me was a lad called Sean Morley, and then he thought I was obviously as quick as I was, only 1:48 guy, but he just seen his time, and he thought, oh my God, this guy's quite quick. I went, mate, that was about 5 years ago. And then I break 2 minutes, I'll be delighted. So I said to the guy, I'll take the first lap. I says, hang on. I says, you know, try and get work between 4 and 6. So sort of giving this guy some race sort of finesse in how to try and break his 2 minutes. He'd never done it. And he just about cracked it. And I remember after he was chatting to me saying, would I coach him? I says, I'm not a coach. I'm not even licensed to coach. And he said, you could do a coaching course, couldn't you, surely? So I said, I'll let you know. So I did actually follow up on it and contacted England Athletics to them. They bypassed the first level at that time. If you competed internationally, they let you go straight to level 2. So I did level 2 at Gateshead Stadium over the weekend, so as licensed to coach and such. And then I did get back in touch with Sean. He'd been injured for a year, nearly, it was 10 and a half months off the sport. So he had a lot of groundwork to do. And we managed to keep him injury free. See, I managed to keep him injury free, keeping him on the grass at Maiden Castle at Durham by the uni. You know, he was running in the trails quite a lot. We just did a lot of simple base work, rebuild, got him in the gym because he was a little bit weak physically. I felt a bit mentally. I used to take him down to the local boxing club where my mate used to run it. And, you know, once you get sparring with a few kids from them tough council estates, it soon toughens you up mentally. And, you know, he used to put him down and pick him up, throw him back in there. And just, well, that old school like that, Mikey off Rocky, where they throw you back in there and he knew he had to toughen up. He was the first guy, and I just remember that track season, he was itching to get on the track. We had some very good athletes in the Northeast at this point, one being Nick McCormick, as you know, 2012 Olympian, 5,000 metres, more fire, and I think it was Andy Bouchard in that team, possibly 2012. And then he also had Ricky Stevenson. Now, Ricky was a guy who, he won the short race cross-country in Edinburgh. He beat more, you know, so again, some great athletes in the Northeast. Now, Sean was he was third in the county championships with those guys, long way down. We had run 3:55. I know he was itching to get on the track, but he had horrendous calf and soleus problems in the lower calf. Top of the Achilles, really tight always, and that's what cost him interruptions always in his training. So I just kept him on the grass. It was an oval grass pitch. I think I remember somewhere around about mid-June, he was literally begging me to put him on the track, and I said, well, I'll tell you what, these spikes will go on the track. So you come down, and Durham's only got 4 lanes. So he did his warm up as normal. I said, put your spikes on. I said, meet me on the track, you know, I'll stand there. So you come over. I've got to jump up and down a couple of times. I said, how's the legs? He's been great. I said, right, well, we've been on the track, take your spikes off and come back in the grass. And I'll fast forward it. That guy that year, he went to BMC Old Trafford. He ran. He jumped for 3:48 at Jarrell, sorry. Then we went to Trafford. He went 3:41. And that was a massive jump, And we just mirrored the training I was doing, obviously, in the Northeast. I felt he was a similar type of out and out 1500 meter runner to someone like a Cram, because he wasn't very quick, but he had a good engine. He could move well across the ground. We focused on bread and butter sessions, 10, 400s off the minute. Nothing amazing, nothing super exciting, but maxed him at 2 workouts a week, kept him injury free. We kept him in the ice baths as well. The Durham, these all the rugby players had the ice baths, and his S&C was always on point. Kept him boxing with conditioning work with guys. And then, as I say, so that year, he finished off with 3:41. Next year, he won some good races. He won the Cork Six Sports Meet. Beat a guy called Lee Emanuel, who was literally flying on the world race and all these indoors. He's great at the NCAA, sub 340 guy, and
Yeah.
Sean really developed very, very well. And I received a job offer down at Timex, but I had to relocate to Loughborough University, where I based myself at Loughborough. Sean had got a girlfriend at the time, and he was reluctant to follow his dream of running. So the dream halted after 2 years, and he stopped at 340. He actually stopped from the sport. He got a job. And that guy would have been a very, very good, I reckon, 3,000-metre steeplechaser. Luke Gunnar, if he looks at him, and he even say, look, if you can get him chasing, you have potential to run like in the teens. For the chaser was that robust and that comfortable off the ground, and he could hurdle on both legs. So that was the end of them. Sean, he was the first athlete I approached.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being so detailed, because I think, like Matt said, it is really important to see where it all started. Like with during kind of your time with Sean, did you have any other athletes as well, or was it one-to-one for the whole 2 years?
So at that time, it was just Sean. That wasn't by choice running. You know, generally, you start within a club. One thing I've never, ever done is look for athletes. Mm. I've had many situations recently where I've had athletes. They've got coaches, they knock the door, but I'm very ethical. If you ever get Phil Kisser, I'm sure he'll give you an example of many of his athletes not my goal, and I'm ethical as who I coach and how I coach and why I coach. Generally, people think there's a magic wand. I've found that a lot of people think scammers have a magic wand. There's not, it's just hard work. And so whenever the athletes knock the door, it has to be the right fit for them and for me, because it's a relationship. I'll generally have a phone call before I speak to anybody. I'm sure you guys have been on Tinder. if you just rock up and meet some person off a date and start having a conversation, it's a relationship, you're mad. So same as coaching. Coaching and Tinder is the same. You literally got to suss the person out. Will this fit? Will it work? If not, you know, why waste each other's time? It's got to be the right fit with coaching and athletes. So I know you guys have had Callie on the show as well. And great example of a perfect fit in terms of persona, the right fit, dreams, ambitions, everything else I look for in an athlete. So generally, it's a case of the fit has to be perfect.
Yeah, I think that's kind of sums up maybe your coaching style, which we'll touch on a little bit deeper. But, you know, the fact that, yeah, you're probably not willing to coach anyone and everyone who comes to you, and you want... You know, and even the story you just told us then with Sean, you know, it sounds like you have quite a deep relationship with these people, and it's more than just kind of holding a stopwatch, you know, on a weeknight.
It is, you know, even so yesterday, there's a young girl from Loughborough. She's just on her first year there. I'll say young, she's about 20, but she had 2 years of work with the NHS. I thought I'd catch up with her yesterday, Lily. And she's a 4'8 girl. I knew this girl from her early days at the club, and she had some bone surgery, bless her, and she literally was left by the wayside at the club, not really anybody there to pick the pieces up for her, and she's always just kept in touch, whatever, and I've sent her plans while she was going through her bone surgery. It was just some keeping her fit, but she still loves the sport, and she's really keen, and we're trying to link her up with Carl Bennett at the university. And but she said yesterday, she brought me a little cake and said, I wanted to thank you, because for the last year and a half, she goes, you're not just exactly what you said, that's what brought to mind. You're not just a coach for the sport, what do you actually care? You know, and like, I would probably drop out of sport. You know, I've discovered life, boys, and things. And but she goes, she thanked me for being more than a coach with a stopwatch, you know, because you do have to care. Coaching now, you know, is completely different to when I was coached, because we're not just managing athletes, we're managing even how they portray themselves on social media. Mm. You know, you're trying to say, you know, for example, in the early days of some athletes, you know, I've seen online at like 12:30 when we've all done it, we've all sat still on our Instagram or on our social media after hours. And one of the things I demand from the athletes is that they recover well in between workouts. And so you're managing other aspects of the athlete's life, not just their running, if they want to be the best they could be and compete on a world stage.
Yeah, it seems like a good place to bring in Samantha Harrison, man, because obviously that's quite a close relationship you've had. You've done a phenomenal job with her. And we want to kind of talk about, what level did you receive, you know, Sam? Because to outsiders like ourselves, you almost took her from almost like a nobody. I know she sort of came from just like a fun runner background. And then now, you know, she is really, I'm sure many were skeptical when she first started having those breakthroughs on the road. You know, and you're like, oh yeah, but how far is she going to go? But now, you know, we're seeing, you know, international 5K times coming from her as well. So maybe, yeah, how did that first come about? And then it would be cool to discuss more on the transition.
I was at Loughborough coaching at Charnwood. I've got a condition, an autoimmune disease called Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, they're both in the family. So I was going through loads of testing on both at the time, and I was really unwell. I ended up in hospital for about 11 weeks. And Samantha coming out to Loughborough, she'd run a road race. She ran a 10K in around about 36 minutes, which is, you know, for female running, it's very, very good club running, very strong.
Yeah.
Naturally, the people in her peers within her club at Notting were telling her how amazing she was. So they literally put her on a pedestal. She wouldn't know any different because she's just finished in the top three. At that point, she'd run a fun run marathon. She'd run a fun run half, around about 80 minutes, 78 minutes. So she believed all this hype and said, you need to go off to university. You know, we've got British Athletics there. So she went down there to speak to the endurance coaches at the time. And she was told politely that she wasn't that good. So it was a bit of a shame, but she felt a bit disheartened. And that was her first sort of knock on the door of elite level coaching. And somebody actually said that, what about the local club, Charlie, Alison Wyeth and Vince Wilson? Obviously, I was in hospital at the time, having time off. I come out of hospital. I was told about this girl, how, you know, she'd come down and nobody wanted her. So I went up to watch her at Nottingham Half Marathon. And she ran again there for 77 minutes. And I spoke to them. I said, are you coached at this moment in time? I believe you've been to Loughborough and you were knocked back by the system. But what's your setup? And she said, well, I train at Nottingham. The guy there who set up the training was ready to step back. So I went through to Nottingham. I did all the right things. I went up there with a coach license, spoke with the club. Said, is this guy retiring? Do you need any endurance coaches? Because I considered maybe a switch. You know, I've done a lot of club athletics, different clubs. And I thought, Nottingham's only 25 minutes. I used to play a lot of poker tournaments back then, and the dusk till dawn poker place is about 15 minutes up. So I thought I'd do a bit of coaching, play the midweek tournament. And then, you know, it's still going to be your life. You do, you coach, you enjoy doing what you're doing. I thought this would be a nice Tuesday night, a nice Thursday night. So yeah, I just got a little bit more speaking with Samantha, and I found out that she had no planning, no structure. The people in the club, they were telling me that she would just like not recover. She would just smash every run. She was walking a tightrope, basically, of overtraining. Not nutrition. Not their nutrition was so poor, which we wouldn't have understood because she didn't understand Reds, how much, you know, she was training, I guess, how much she was actually, how much fuel she was putting into her body. She was working far too hard. So I sat her down basically and said, look, if you want me to coach you, this is how I look, my style of coaching. You might not be suited to this. I said, you've got to remember, you've come from fun run background. I've got to deliver a level of training for you that's going to be progressive. You're going to understand why we're doing things. For example, we're going to have to get you into the gym. She couldn't do three press-ups at that point. Couldn't do three. In general, she would sink. Her core was quite weak. I explained about her nutrition. You know, I'll talk all things periods with girls. You know, I explained about when you're training, either late or in the middle of your cycle, the effect it can have on you as an individual, and why it's important to back off. I put the reins on, and so I literally went through, which I do with anybody, a very open and frank conversation in terms of how I feel coaching would be helpful for the athlete. And she was dead keen. She was like, literally, I know I train too hard in the week. I know I'm not doing the right thing. She didn't understand, for example, the importance of refueling throughout the workout. She didn't understand how many calories she was burning off the water, which was intake. She was a full-time dental nurse on her feet all day. She'd be up every day at that point about 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
So there's a lot of lifestyle changes we had to look at. She loved her social media. She still does now. So she loves a spray tan. Where I manage the spray tans. Gotta get some priorities. And it was just simply, I did it slowly, basically. I knew if I threw everything at her, she would hate it. She'd be like, nah, not for me. So I just slowly introduced these changes over a period of time. For example, in the S&C, I literally got doing band work, got to do some James 3 circuits online in lockdown. Just the most basic core fundamentals of what you would generally need to be robust to have a platform to at least go to another level. And it was small steps. So those small steps have still resulted in injury-free.
Wow. And how does it look now? Like, is there more steps to take, do you think, from that? Or is it now more fine-tuning as if she's kind of almost there from that perspective?
Good question, because you've obviously seen this year, the focus became track-based as opposed to the marathon. Admittedly, I thought we could possibly do London in October. The beginning of the year, we mapped out the season, and I'd said to Samantha, I felt my strength as a coach would be from my track background. Look, I put my hand up with the marathon, I've got so much more to learn, a million, years and years of learning from marathon. I speak to a lot of people who are respected in the sport, people like Ian Mott, who, as you know, won two majors. Even there's a guy called John Kane up in the Northeast, who's Brendan Foster's and man when they ran Nova International. And these guys were great 10,000 meter runners, great endurance runners. Mike McLeod was on the stag do with Ryan only 3-4 weeks ago on Ryan McLeod's stag do. And I'll pick brains here, there, and everywhere. So, with regards to Salamanca this year, I felt she had to improve her bottom end speed. It was reasonable, but with great respect, not good enough. For example, she ran 32:38 last year on the track in Birmingham when they had the night of the 10,000, the first time she ran it, was during a lockdown period. And you could see she was very green. She, even now, if you watch the Commonwealth, she's like literally runs on almost the outside of lane one. There was a lot, to learn 25 laps of the track is hard, and in order to run 25 laps of the track efficient as well, you have to be very, very good over 5K. Of course, it's like 1500 meter running. Ian Duffy is a great example. He's not just a great 1500 meter runner, he's a world class, wins world class 800 meter races. I just believe that no matter what your event is, you've got to be efficient at speed to a level. Of course, even giving an example, Samantha's bottom end speed of 400 meters is it's not that quick. It's about a very good day, 68 low, 1.3. I've never seen her run a 67, but she could output 25 laps in 73.7, so she's operating at about 92%. So it still shows there is a lot more. So we have to still develop her speed. I think we should never be away too far away from that, but in different periodizations. So that's why we focused on her track season. I felt she could make the Commonwealth Games team. She was told by many people in the sports, even with the governing body, that she would make that team. So that made even more of a fire in her belly to make that team. We had to obviously run a lot quicker than 32:38, because we were told even if you run inside the qualifier, which was only 32:30, it wasn't going to be good enough. We knew we had to be looking at least a minute to at least make that team. So the training was set up that. That's a lot. We need to be operating a lot of workouts. We worked on aerobic, mix with anaerobic, mix it with speeds, rather than just doing 10 by a kilo, none of that monotonous stuff. We do like a 2K, 600, 300, a mile of 63, 12 of 63, the 8-6-3. Make sure the volume was right. Mm-hmm. Make sure each energy system has been taxed. These sessions on paper, I had a lot of people there. I post now again sessions, not times, but sessions. And there's a lot of activity to get through my social media, a lot of people questioning these, which is great, because you want that sort of, people ask about these workouts, what's the objectives, and is it enough, is it too much, and I just will judge us in the summer. 10,000 metres for me is still a big learning area as well, being a 1500 metre athlete. I do believe that if you tax each energy system and you get the volume right and you're recovering well, you piece it together carefully, plan in advance. It's like a jigsaw, make the outline and the rest just all of a sudden you just put the pieces in and it's quite quickly forms a good plan. And the plan was hatched, as you could see, obviously by the results this year. So still a lot of work to do across each energy system aerobic. We have to gradually build that still. So she's not done excessive, you know, Phil Sesame's hit 120, 130 miles per week. We're nowhere near that. It's like, you know, averaging throughout the summer was about 80s. Throughout the summer, of course, this track. The plan now is to run London Marathon in April. So progressively, by the time in the new year, she will go over the 100. We'll probably top if she can handle it, about 110, 115. Getting a lot of quality in there, a lot of emphasis on workouts within the long run. As opposed to just 24 miles, 25 miles, week in, week out. So there's a lot of work to be done, but it is carefully planned strategically throughout each period of the year.
Right, you talk about, you know, kind of how green she was on the track this year. I think that Highgate 10K kind of summed it up. She ran a phenomenal time. But obviously, you know, real big surge. I think it was even under halfway, wasn't it? It was coming up to that 5K mark. She surged as well. So are you still, obviously you got London in April, but you're still going to look back to the track next summer as well?
Yeah. I'll just touch on Highgate first of all. I think I was just to give a few people a bit of understanding, obviously, how that race went actually from the inside. So we knew that she would get dropped at the beginning, simply right. Again on that bottom end speed. So I remember saying, look, at the beginning, you will get dropped, but you're good enough to maintain. What'll happen, there'll be a breakaway based on the pace that was set, but they will come back after about 8 laps. After 2 mile in, it'll settle. It's then a case of don't settle with it, just keep moving around, keep moving around, keep moving around. And eventually, we knew what she had passed halfway in. You know, we were looking close to about 15:35, 15:40. And then she stuck to the game plan. She executed that perfectly. A lot of people have said, and I've heard this time and time again with many of her races, if you look at the vitalities of the last few years, the year when Lily Bartos won it, it was 2019, Sam took it out to her. You know, Lily only caught her in the latter stages. 2 years ago, she did the same with Charlotte Purdue.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And she took it on. And same with the 9 to 10,000, she takes the races on. Now, you've got to, as a coach, you've got to encourage that. I think she could have sat back and maybe executed and, you know, her strength is her strength. But I think equally, the biggest strength is she's got no fear. She won't take anybody on. Even in Berlin, the Africans, she was like fourth in that 260 at 12, having a go. And I think you should always encourage having a go without being suicidal, have a game plan, be executing of it. And because in the infancy of that Lily Bartos age, I told Sam she was going in there, I thought she was good enough for 69 minutes. We were training at that pace. At that one time, she's not in shape to do it, but I'm planting the seed that she can do it. She doesn't do it there, but what then happens, she then goes and runs to somewhere else. She does run 69. We then say, look, you know, we're gonna train like a 68 minute 10 half marathon runner. We just keep moving the ball, move the training forward, give her that belief. You have to believe it because you know. I bet you guys or any most of your listeners, I bet you 95% people are wearing a Garmin, looking at the watch, looking at the watch. You look at any of her racers, she does not wear a watch. Now that's so rare. But what she does, she focuses.
Especially on the roads, it's even more rare on the roads, yeah.
I think, you know, look, when it comes to marathon, I think we've got to get we'll get that right for the marathon, but I think 10Ks, 5Ks, half, run free, run with no fear, run with belief. So as much as she gets caught up, and maybe like heard you on that race, do you know what? So what? Because next year, you will be that 68-minute runner. You're disappointed you got beat, but what happens? You dust yourself down because she doesn't like defeat. It's great. We want her to be upset when she's not winning. Not physically, but, you know, we're going to be upset that it's not complacency, and then we just keep moving forward, and she does move forward. So it's vital that we keep looking at improvements across every event from 5,000 until we obviously really get it right for the marathon. That's going to take some years to master.
Yeah, it's fascinating listening to your kind of relationship with her in that sense. Can we now just contrast it with Callie? Like you mentioned Callie earlier. You got her like earlier this season, and obviously I'm not saying she's like a finished article, but you get her and she's already got a world championship qualifying time. So how different is that process taking on an athlete at that level? And then how do they work together in training and things like that?
So what Callie rang up was after the British Champs. Admittedly, she knows she didn't run her best race. But she was in that cold room, like everybody else. She was on her own. I wasn't coaching Callie at this point. Knew her to speak to. But I remember after that race, I think she probably did a lot of assessments on herself. And though I didn't have a coach there in that call room, I think she could have done with somebody in that call room. No matter how good you are, you just need someone to calm you down, keep you chilled, keep you relaxed. She also felt that she was going to be based in the UK for the next period throughout the summer. She had aspirations of making the Commonwealth Games team. And she was in great shape. I mean, look at the camp she come out of with Nick Bidozla. You know, it's a phenomenal camp. Those guys have been racing since March. She opened up 15-9 early goals in March. So she was already in shape. The work she'd obviously been done carried her forward. She just needed somebody close to work with while she was at home. So I messaged Nick, just obviously Callie been speaking to me. I didn't know if Callie was going to return back, because Callie's a bit free spirit. I spoke to Nick and said, look, either she can come and train with Samantha, we'll look after her for a while. Callie was looking to run, you know, if she returned back, I would say, look, if you go back to Australia, link back up with Nick, because that's given you a great platform, it's given you good results. But at this moment in time, we need to do things right. So I told her to speak to Nick herself, which she did, so then this is all right. And that's great, because obviously I still have a good relationship with Nick now. I can, for example, Samantha decided to go and train in Australia, be the first guy I picked the phone and said, look, can you look after Samantha? He's a world-renowned coach. So everything was doing right. It was evident to me with Callie that she loves to race, as you could see. If you look at how many races she's had this year, including Rhodes, you know, it's phenomenal. Personally, with someone like Samantha, she's very selective. Look, if it's one a month. So that's again where it comes back to coaching. If you strip back what the athlete loves and how they are as a person, so they are completely two different people who are coached, and they both understand this completely different. So Callie's now in Flagstaff for the minute. You know, she wish she got a tattoo with this free spirit on her, you know. That's who she, if you take that away, you go, listen, I want you to train with us. So you couldn't do that. Mm. And how I coach Callie, how I coach Sam, Callie's got so much experience. You know, she's 29 years old and she understands. She's been in the sport a long time. She's trained already in America in the collegiate system. She's trained, as I said, with Nick out there. She's literally trained with that many athletes. She knows what's best. What she needs is somebody at the end of that phone who she knows has got her back, who will fight for her, who will, you know, even be a contractor, a shoe company, be it in the right races. You know, the guys at Ford here will tell you on the Ford to try and make sure everything's right for her. Because a settled mind is a settled athlete. And now, you know, she's looking to decide who she's signed with on that front. It just makes my job easier because she's not bringing me up, stressing about financials, of course, because all these camps can cost money. She doesn't get any support because you're not on the world-class performance level with British Athletics, so there's no grants, there's no funding. She has no shoe contract yet. So she has raced some decent races this year. As you know, she paced London Marathon. That's obviously helped her financially going forward. But in terms of how I coach Callie and Sam, it's completely different. So I know she's in Flagstaff. She'll be just linking up with Saturday with Alice Wright, stopping with her at the moment. She'll trim with their group. Kate Snowden's out there. She'll link up. And I'm not going to say, look, you need to be doing this week. I'll tell her not what to do in terms of, like, don't go crazy, like 2 weeks off. Don't go and do 70, 80 miles this week, for example. But the workouts, join in, link up, because you can't go wrong in the winter with certain types of workouts. At this time of year, you know, threshold running, tempo running, maybe some mile reps. But do not, where Samantha needs structure, she needs to know, even her mind, on a plan, in black and white, what she's doing today, what she's doing tomorrow, what she's doing every week, what she's doing the rest of the month. and a broad understanding of how the races work for the rest of the year. So it's completely different coaching styles. And even when they trained together in the summer, we did a few different workouts. There was occasions where I'd actually leave up Commonwealth Games, get Samantha in the camp at Loughborough on her own to train a different workout, then bring Callie afterwards. Because as much as one's doing the 5 and 10, they both need the different types of workouts. So brilliant when they get the crossover, but it's probably even a testament to both the athletes, and they would give that back, that I wasn't just, look, this is one section that fits everybody, it doesn't. We need to work on change of pace with Sam. For example, did the KR and the KR for KR and the KR, whereas Callie could just rattle them out like all sub three. Samantha wouldn't do that at that point. So they train differently, basically, mentally and physically. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it just begs the question, you know, how do you fit it all in? Because it seems like, you know, this coaching one of them is virtually a full-time job, let alone two of them. And are you physically able to coach more than, you know, two of them?
So, yeah. Loughborough University is a young girl called Harriet Bluer. She's part of the Loughborough Uni students. She knocked the door in the summer, so I spoke to Kyle. So she's a little bit lost because most of the guys at Loughborough, they either do 8s and 15s. Harriet's got big ambitions to run 5s and 10s. You know, structurally, she looks like even long-term marathon. So she was a little bit on her own a little bit. So Harriet joined us. She won the South of England Senior Cross Country last year as a junior. And she's got a lot of potential. So she does train with us at Loughborough. I set up an online platform in the lockdown because everyone was wanting training plans. I set an online platform up. I'm more of a fan of coaching face-to-face. I want to see the athletes. I want to see the workouts. I want to try and help with the pace on the bike, and not as quick as used to be, so you need a bike. So in terms of people coming down to the track, it is quite a small group. I'll link up now and again. I'll speak to Rob Denmark and jump in with Millie if it fits. Melissa Courtney, that is. But I tried to communicate with Kyle. I'm a fan of trying to link athletes with the group. Because also it's about the athletes and who can get the best out. So at certain times a year, we can link up. You know, there's people in Mansfield, a guy, Richard Massey, has got a great group. In touch with John Beattie. John Beattie, as you know, is every year runs sub 30 for 10k. He's a phenomenal athlete. A really positive guy for Samantha to be around. So we'll link up with John. So I just try to link up as well, wherever possible, and when it fits best for the athlete, with other athletes as well, and other coaches. We did that a lot in the Northeast. You don't really get a lot of other coaches linking up. But if you keep that athlete friendly, athlete focused, there's massive benefits in linking up with other groups.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. What is like the setup look like then? So like, what is your kind of role like in and around Loughborough, and like how does that link in with what you do like on a day-to-day basis?
Obviously, I'm, you know, obviously UK Athletics. I was going to say level two, but I got bored in lockdown and did equivalent to level four. I did this called age group classification, which was again further education. So I'm just a club coach or an individual coach. So I don't work at clubs anymore. I just go down there with the athletes. But since Kyle's come on board, very good relationship there. Steve Burton is now with UKA, as you know, is our lead endurance. Fortunately, Steve's, as much as Sandra is and Callie aren't on that world-class performance yet, his role is to look after those athletes. But he's given me his time. He's given me some help in terms of like a key area for improvement with Samantha's fueling. You can see, obviously, even Ailish touched that. If the fueling's not right at the marathon, you're not going to run that well. Kipchoge, we talk about how great his handovers are. Fueling is essential. So understanding it was a big area for my improvements. So Steve in touch with Jamie Peel at Liverpool. So even though I'm independent, I can reach out to people if and when required. Chris Jones is going to try and do some testing for us down at Cardiff as well in terms of physiology. So I think as a coach, you have to be proactive to pick up a phone. I have these conversations. I love my independence to do this because I'm a busy guy outside of my coaching, but I make it work. I'm in a fortunate position that I work predominantly Saturday and Sunday with this retail company I've had for years. It funds me to be able to have Monday, Friday do what I wish, be that coaching, be it out of family, be it out whatever I want to do. So I found myself forced because obviously many coaches, you know, we all have to work, you know, during the week. So it's a bit of a different situation to many that I'm fortunate. I can do well enough of a couple of days work on the weekend to give me a lifestyle to coach.
Yeah, man, you are doing a brilliant job, to be honest with you. But I just wanted to touch upon, we spoke a little bit about it already, but, you know, Sam moving to the marathon. I think marathon running is just a hot topic right now in general. And do you see that as kind of like, you know, when you look at our women over 5 and 10K, really competitive at, you know, world-class level, and then you look at our marathon women, is that kind of, you know, is it a little fair to say it's a little bit weaker? It's a good market to kind of get into that now.
I mean, first of all, we've got Ailish knocking the door of it now. And, you know, so we are training at a level at this moment in time that has to be, first of all, the first step has to be about 224, 225 for Sam this year. That's got to be where you at least minimum have to target up. You've got Charlotte, you know, she's running inside of 222. You know, she'll probably have ambitions to be 220. She was operating 220 pace at London a couple of years ago throughout. It was only the latter little stage, but she's on her own. So Charlotte's going to be running in and around, if not to sub 220, she's definitely going to be in and around that 222 at worst. Jess Buzacki, showing great form again in the marathon. Again, operating in and around there. And if you look what Ailish is doing on the half, it's no given what you do over a half is that you're going to run, you know, a 218, for example. Potentially, she probably runs even more, but there are no givens in the sports. People look at Sam's half. We've worked very hard on that 5:10.5 to get a, you know, 68. But again, we still need to be down to about 66 high, 67 low to run a very phenomenal marathon, but it's gonna take time. So I'd like to think after about 3 to 4 years, Sam's gonna be in and around that sub 220. Her engine is phenomenal. It really is. Her aerobic output, which I touched on earlier with the 25 laps, what her output can be. So it's easier to train the aerobic engine than it is on the anaerobic. And it's not just simple more miles. It's obviously, you know, the longer tempo work we do. We do a lot of, for example, this week, yesterday, she's going to race this weekend at Valencia in the half. You know, it's the first half of the year. She'll run a much quicker half, hopefully, in about, I think, against the rack race at Orica in February. That'll be a race we want, obviously, run 67. I'll put that there. We're looking to run 67 there. But with the marathon, it takes. You've got to remember, she's only been in the sport 3 years. It takes years to build an aerobic tank. You look at how great Ailish is. I keep having to remind Sam, look, you're running times of 10,000 meters that Ailish would be dreaming about maybe only 2-3 years ago. You know, it takes time to build an aerobic engine, and We've got to respect that time. There's no rush. We value the injuries are non-existent. And I'm on about even niggles. You get to have a little tweak, but straight off 2 days, offload and back on it. It's going to take a lot of time to get it right for the marathon. But I do believe that it is on the rise. You know, so Jess and obviously Zaki and also Charlotte running very well. And Ailish coming as debut, she will run very, very quick. So I think we'll actually supersede the 10,000 meter ladies in the marathon going forward. We've got Becky Briggs, some, you know, young athlete, really keen. You've got Alice Wright. I think Alice has got huge, huge potential. You look how brave she was at the Europeans. I just look at a marathon ladies and I still think there's a lot more to come. And I think it'll supersede the 10,000 meter girls over the next 2 to 4 years.
Right. And I guess moving, you know, on the same topic of the marathon, drug testing, you're a man kind of in the know.
Yeah.
You're at a lot of these events, you know, in a professional setting as well as just a coach. You know, do you know any context on what the drug testing is like at road races? You know, do they do, you know, before the race? Do they do after? Do they do at competition, you know, 4 weeks before when these names get announced? Because we're seeing a lot of big busts and you as a coach must be thinking, you know, quite negatively about it.
I mean, first of all, I did hear obviously on some Kipchoge's team. He has this inner circle, the close one.
So it's boring.
Yeah. You know, you look at all these things and it's really frustrating because, you know, I'm not going to be politically correct if I hope that it gets cleaned up. No, it really, really angers me. I won't swear, but it really angers me when you see how hard, you know, literally, this workout yesterday, as I said, we did like 3 miles, high-end threshold, then 3 by a mile. And I'm literally here, and someone, she's screaming as she's training. Literally, I'm on the back. She's literally crawling out in pain. She trained so damn hard. And then for some athletes to just go and run out the local shop and go get some EPO somewhere in Africa, or, you know, in lockdown periods where the testing was minimum, and literally run them off where there's no testers flying around, and advantages have been taken all over the world for that. I can give you some our testing on this year. So when we went to Berlin, half marathon there earlier this year, I think it was March time. So we checked in the hotel, and what I really liked about the half marathon, they had everybody in there to start with, literally everybody in the elite race. So all in the corridor, all in the reins. Samantha got called for blood. She was in a bit of panic because, you know, with the needles and different things, but it was good I was there just to relax her. So they took blood from Sam. And you want that because, I'll be honest, on the outside, somebody wouldn't know Sam, doesn't know me, maybe just somebody new, let's say any country, they'll go, look at this girl. Well, it was only 2 years ago, she's running like 73, but now she's running, you know, you'd want to get her in, you know, and I'm all for that, you know. So Sam's been tested quite a lot this year, which is good. I think it's catching them, not just at competition, it's out of competition. All these guys are doing the best they can, but sometimes at the minute, I would say the best isn't good enough. There's literally so much more testing. But even if federations are doing monthly testing, you know, there has to be a lot more at that level because they're getting there, but I just said it don't cost a lot of money, but there's a lot of prize money in the marathon. Maybe they could operate and use some of that money in better testing, more regular testing. It's just awful to see when athletes are being robbed, you know, so...
Yeah, and I wondered if you know, you said Berlin was specifically good. Has Sam been to a race and not been tested, you know, a woman of her level? Has she been to a few road races and not had testing within, you know, 2 weeks either side of it, including the race?
Yeah, she has. I think domestic races spring to mind, first of all. In terms of international, I don't think she got tested at the Europeans. She has had a lot of testing. I'm just trying to think in terms of where they were at. When you get on, if you get on, she'll run through the list. But yeah, there's many races where there is no testing.
Yeah,
many. And as I say, it's not just at the races. People are obviously trying to be smart, trying to be clever, trying to do it before, trying to do it in hidden camps in the mountains or wherever they're hiding. You know, to get that spell of training and recovering well in between. So. It's very, very, as I say, it's a coach. You know what's happening. You're not stupid to it. You watch them finish races and jumping around like, you know, they're ready for a game of five-a-side football for an hour. It's just annoying. It just costs people, not interested in the money, but costs people titles. And, you know, you look at the track this year, you don't know what's happening until years down the line, you then get told, oh, you could have been on that podium. That takes a lot from the athlete, you know. Respect to giving medals out is not really strong at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you mentioned how obviously it's not all about the money, but especially in some of these kind of marathon races, I do wonder why it's one of the contributing factors to kind of world majors reducing some of their prize money, and that they don't want to be giving it to athletes who are wrongly kind of getting it, things like that. And I'm not sure how they go about chasing prize money back from athletes who've been caught.
I think a lot of them, you know, I'm not just popping the finger at Africa, but no. Risk versus reward springs to mind. You know, you finish 10th in a marathon and you're still going to get about $10,000. It's enough to set you up in a farm. You know, they're just, it's all managed by similar agents, similar management companies, and they just know the 10 a penny. Could be somebody else that come in. We all watch the training videos of the groups. There's like 50, 60 deep in a group. You know, and then it'll just be somebody else in there. And so it's not getting any better. They say it is, but it's not.
No. Yeah. And then just before we finish up, let's just discuss, you know, the crossover between parkrun and half marathons. Obviously, Sam kind of came out of that background herself. Do you think, you know, yeah, instead of maybe looking at schools, we could start to look at, you know, park runs and how they're growing in order to get them, you know, into clubs and under coaching?
So last month, Samantha ran a park run up at Long Eaton. It was part of a workout. She didn't run with the chip. A bit frustrated because she would have got the park run record. But what was great was you had Jamie Webb there. Jamie was very lucky. She nearly did him. 2 seconds. 2 seconds, mate. You'd have got chicked. So next time, when you give it a date, we've got a rematch. So I had great pleasure in ringing my mate up, Mr. Yates, Matthew, and said, look, Jamie nearly got stuffed off Sam today. 2 seconds. And I got a bite off Yates. He said, oh, he's in the gym for 3 hours. Well, Sam was in the toilet for about 3 days, mate. Literally, she wasn't going to run. But she couldn't keep off the loo midweek. So, look, if we could get more athletes, higher level, even if they're using them as a workout in the park room, that will attract more quality. We don't want, you know, you look at the podium guys, they're doing a great job with all of these. But I just think if you look at, when you go to these podium races, your park runners aren't there, you know, it's just elite. But I think if you get one or two elites operating and then rocking up in a park room, that's inspiring for them kids, because like, obviously families turn up, mum, dad, we've got the kids running around with them, you know, and Sam was signing autographs, you know, for kids in there, and it inspires. We have to inspire. You know, I've all tried to organise Sam a club visit, put sticky GB kit on and come down and do some drills, and you know, if you can at least do something where these athletes will turn up at a park and it will inspire, you have to inspire the next generation to turn up. I still think, even on another thing with regards to inspiring and trying to get people in the sport, I honestly would love to see funded athletes by British Athletics as a mandatory doing 1 year coaching. Just 1 year. So you've had all this money year in, year out, year out. Go and repay 1 year. When you finish your career, be it club coaching, be it elite coaching. But I guarantee you, if you've got these, they have a lot to give. And I'm not just saying elite athletes will make good coaches, but I'm saying they have a lot to offer.
A lot, yeah.
You know, they have a lot in terms of experience. You know, you can't buy experience, you know. And if you were mandatory as part of your lottery funding or your work-class performance funding or your shoe contract even, 1 year coaching, I guarantee you would get more coaches in the sport to start with. You know, high quality of coach, and I guarantee you, some would actually love it because I truly passionately love coaching. You know, and I do it for free. You know, I do not charge. For example, Sam, I'll give you some help. Sam puts 100 quid fuel allowance because Adidas put a coaching allowance in their contract. So I go to the Europeans, I'm very fortunate Adidas to fund that. So I don't charge like me for my time being there on the track. Same with Cali, not took a penny off them. Tried, you know, so I'm highly passionate, and I think a lot of coaches, they would really enjoy. Some won't, some will. So I think it'd be a good way forward to getting better coaching.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting idea. Look, Vince, it looks like that's a pretty good time to end, I think. It's been great to chat to you, and thanks so much for coming on the pod. We'll have to get Sam on too, and then we got the set.